Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shri Shuka Uvacha Ityuddhavad Upakarnya Sudhidam Dushaham Madham Yanena Samayakshatha Shokam Upatitam Utha. Shri Sukha Uvacha Ityuddhavad Upakarnya Suridam Dushaham Vadham Yanena Samayachattha Shokam Utpaditam Buddha. Shri Sukha Uvacha Ityuddhavad Upakarnya Suridam Dushaham Vadam Yanena Samayachattha Shokam Utpatitam Buddha. Shri Sukha Uvacha Ityuddhavad Upakarnya Suridam Dushaham Vadam Yanena Samayachattha Shokam Utpatitam Buddha. Shishuka Uvacha. Shishukadev Goswami said, Ike, thus, Uddhavata, from Uddhava, Upakarnya, hearing, Suridam, of friends and relatives, Dushaham, unbearable, Vadam, annihilation. Yanena, by transcendental knowledge, Asmat, pacified himself, Shatta, Vidura, Shokam, bereavement, Upatitam, arisen, Buddha, the learned. Translation. Shri Sukadev Goswami said, after hearing from Uddhava all about the annihilation of his friends and relatives, the learned Vidura pacified his overwhelming bereavement by dint of his transcendental knowledge. Purport. Vidura was informed that the result of the battle of Kurukshetra was the annihilation of his friends and relatives, as well as the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, and also the passing away of the Lord. All these hurled him into bereavement for the time being. But because he was highly advanced in transcendental knowledge, he was quite competent to pacify himself by enlightenment. As it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, due to our long association of bodily relationships, bereavement on account of the annihilations of friends and relatives is not at all astonishing. But one has to learn the art of subduing such bereavement with higher transcendental knowledge. The talks between Uddhava and Vidura on the topic of Krishna began at sunset, and Vidura was now further advanced in knowledge due to his association with Uddhava. So here we get the we see how that the devotees, then they deal with calamity. And here we're talking devotees that are, these are great devotees. So, in here we see that an element here that's being brought out is attachment. So, we speak so much about attachment, how one shouldn't be attached, right, to nothing. And in one sense, it's correct, because underlying what we are meaning, become attached to Krishna. But generally in the translation, that gets lost. You know, things like, you shouldn't even enjoy prasad. But prasad is Krishna. Alright? So then, we get this situation in which kind of persons that have been around a long time and have, how you say, through cultivation, have deeply prunified themselves. Prunified, you know, get wrinkled up like an old prune, dried up, shriveled up, you know. They've managed to take what little bit of hope and desire was there in looking for an ideal of the perfect relations and interactions and dry them up to the perfectional point where even enjoying a life in Krishna consciousness is considered unfavorable. But we see that that's not necessarily what the acharyas are meaning when they're talking about detachment. Detachment for us technically means transferring of affection. Right? Because as a jiva, there's no such thing as detachment. It just doesn't exist for us. Because as a soul, being energy, we are attached to the energetic. We can't get around that one. Detached means Krishna's detached. Right? He's independent, so he's detached. He can do it. We can't. So what we're meaning here is it's being translated into a language that we understand in our aspirations for godness or godhood. Is that we think we're independent, the controller, the enjoyer. Therefore, then we bring out the point of engaging that properly in the Lord's service through detachment. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, the point would be, don't be attached to the material energy, it's an inferior attachment, be attached to Krishna, that's the superior, that's actually what you're looking for. You want something that's going to work and not bother you, not disappoint you, not let you down. You can always trust, always will be there. Right? Then that's Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But, unfortunately, it would not then cater to our sentiment of being God. Because that's what we're starting with. Right? This is what's so interesting about the acharyas and the Lord and how they'll preach to the time, place, and circumstance. They'll take our maya and use that as the tool to get us out of it. You know? So expertly done. Right? We want to be God, so then they talk to us like you're God. Okay, God. Let's get out of this attachment, get out of this God scenario and into another one. Right? Does that make sense? So, it's very cleverly done. And then, as you work into it, then, you know, that surrender, the this, the that. And slowly, slowly it comes. So then, in that point, then, that's when this idea of being God kind of gets in the way. Because if you're God, you don't surrender, right? Like that. Though, at the same time, you see, God does surrender. He surrenders to the affection of his devotees. But that's a fine point that we have to deal with later. that we have to kind of figure out that, well, being God's a little different than what we thought. Being a hardcore impersonalist, that is our idea of God, right? We're the supreme controller, the enjoyer, whatever we want, it goes that way. But where does it leave in the others? Does that make sense? So if someone has to do, okay, then that's there, that's nice. You know, like you had one person and he was thinking he isn't very powerful. And someone else says, I'm sorry, but politically you're nothing. And he retorts, no, I'm very powerful. See, he calls one of his assistants. See that bottle of ink there? Drink it. Right? And the servant drinks it. And then he says, see, I'm still powerful. But what's the relationship? Okay, you got a great relationship. You can tell people to drink bottles of ink, and they'll do it. Okay, great. But what is that as far as relationship? Is that what we're looking for? Is that the kind of relationship you want? Right? If you're basing it on who's in control and who's the enjoyer, then things like trust. How you say surrender, you know, for lack of a better word here, that just willingness to commit oneself to for the other's pleasure at the expense of your own. Where does that come into the equation of being the controller and enjoyer? Right? Think about it. Now think about that whenever something happens that pokes your ego, where the false ego comes up, the pride, your position, your authority, your power. You can have it, but where is the relationship in it? Right? We hear about the great kings. They were king of the world. But you don't hear them talk about that. You hear about enemies, or the dacoits, and the thieves, and bad people trembling at the sight of them, but not the common people, not the other persons, not the persons working with them or under them. You always hear about their magnanimity and their kindness, their, right? So that's power with relationship. But just to have power doesn't mean you have a relationship. I mean, it is in one sense, but it's an existence. It's a state of existence, that I exist in a state where I am in control of this other person. But that's a state of existence, right? It's my house. It's my car. I can do with it what I want. I can paint it when I want. I can not paint it when I want. I can, you know, drive it when I want, not drive it when I want. I can even wash it when I want or not wash it when I want, right? Does that make sense? So that's a state of existence. It's not a relationship as such. Of course, it has potential, but does this make sense? So, therefore, what happens is we get muddled in our need for relationship and the desire to control the environment in which relationship can come up. But are we creating that environment, or protecting that environment, or generating that environment with an idea that relationships will happen? How will they happen? Right? Our focus is on controlling and enjoying. How will the relationship happen? Right? Does that make sense? If I'm worried about, okay, I'm washing all the pots, I'm cleaning all the counters, I'm polishing all the knives and sharpening, and I'm ordering all the supplies, and everything is all there, and if anybody gets too close, hey, that's my cabbage, you know, back off. Step away from the cabbage. Step away from, right? Then, but is any cooking going on? Is any eating going on? Serving? People appreciating? No. So we're defending our environment. But is it being defended in such a way that it's compatible for relationships like these great personalities? These are powerful personalities. Here, Vidura was the prime minister for the emperor of the world. You know, not a bad position. And Uddhava was the same for Krishna and Dwarka. He was the prime minister. Right? Both extremely powerful persons. Right? But you can see in all this the relationship that is can happen in the environment created. It means your prime minister means that your state of existence, that you have that influence over that field. So that means as the prime minister, you have a natural relationship with everybody in the kingdom. Right? Does that make sense? The king, all the other ministers, everybody else in the administration, right? All the officials throughout the kingdom, right? Down to the village level. Then all the citizens under them, that's your responsibility. So what comes out is the feeling of father not being the controller and enjoyer. Does that make sense? So this technique is used to, because we can relate to it, be detached, yes, because underlying we take detached as a position of power. It is an opulence of the Lord, you know, but it's also the position of God. But what we're dealing with in this, but actually for us, detachment generally means repulsion. Something is giving us trouble to control and enjoy, therefore we repulse from it, therefore we're called detached or renounced. Is that, yeah? It's not that, it's actual detachment, because actual detachment is neutrality. You don't care. Right? Does that make sense? That's detachment. Otherwise, you know, you're very, very hungry, then you're expecting one particular kind of meal, and everything like that, and then it's delayed, and then it doesn't happen, and then you end up with something that you didn't really, weren't really interested in. It's okay, but like that, and then you become angry, oh, I don't want to eat. So, are we detached? Not actually. But it's used, right? That's the whole point. Krishna consciousness is so perfect that it will use that as a springboard to catapult one into the spiritual platform. Right? Because what you're showing is a detachment from the material energy is what you want. Though it's actually a repulsion for it. But whatever it is, it works. It doesn't matter. Right? It doesn't matter. It works. It helps us get out. Right? So this brings us to a point being made here that attachment's the actual thing. But it's attachment to Krishna and his devotees. So, if we have, and in that we have to detach ourselves from other things. So whatever is the method for detachment, that's not so important, as long as it's accomplished. Right? Material energy is pretty good at accomplishing it, right? It means the soul expects something to last, and nothing does here. So one always becomes frustrated, no matter how good the situation. It doesn't matter. Right? It just, it's yours now. The next life is someone else's. You know, your house, next life belongs to someone else. Your land is someone else. You know, you had a nice old house and someone comes along, knocks it down, makes a condo. Right? So, it's just the way it is. Right? When they do archaeology, they go through layers and layers and layers and layers. I think I was reading one article that someone in, I forget where it was, in Jerusalem or something, there was some hollow point or something in the floor, or something they were trying to fix. And in fixing it, they found that it went through a room to below that, which went to a room below that. So there were like four or five generations of full houses being built on top of the other, that the place had built up so much, you know, went back hundreds of thousands of years. So, you know, so the point is it's going to be gone. It's someone else's. It's never ours anyway. So, we need something that is ours, right? And that's Krishna. Right? He is. He's there. He lasts. He doesn't go away. That's the nice thing about him. Not only that, he's cute. Right? Right? Good looking. He's powerful. He's intelligent. Right? You know, so he's quite quite respectable in this way. So we see that here is that it's not that the attachments aren't dealt with, but Uddhava here, or Vidura in this case, knows how through knowledge. Uddhava did it before in previous verses. Now Vidura is doing it through knowledge, is detaching himself from this situation or being able to adjust with the situation. Okay? Uddhava is doing it out of direction from the Lord. Right? So that means if there's a problem in the material world, then there are situations, it means techniques you can do to adjust the situation. Right? Like the Lord told him, go to Bhadrikashram. So that's adjusting the situation. But he never said that is completely what it takes to make the problem go away. The real problem goes away when you apply knowledge. Philosophy, that's actually what clears the problem. Right? But it's combined. Right? Some will say you just adjust things, others will say it's just philosophy. But you see the Lord is using both. Vidura is using, Uddhava is using. Is that you adjust the situation to make it more workable for being Krishna conscious. At the same time, the philosophy is applied because actually that's the only thing that's going to last. Right? So that balance is what's important. Because Krishna consciousness needs a balance. Right? Prabhupada talks about it. The razor's edge. Right? And he talks about the left and the right. So where does that put the razor blade? Right? Geographically, it puts it in the middle. So that means balanced. So Krishna consciousness is the perfect balance. Right? Everything is perfectly adjusted. So in that, then it takes into consideration all that is complete. It takes into consideration the person, the individual, at the same time as the actual situation, the overall. Right? So all that is considered. That becomes then perfect. And so then the Lord here is able to give this direction, and his direction is always be connected to him. So Uddhava, because it's instructions, then going to Bhadrikashram, is serving the Lord, so therefore he's always with the Lord. Right? That's the point he's trying to do, is that if you're with the Lord, you won't have any problem. But in here, it doesn't mean that there won't be some seemingly emotional difficulties, but that's not a problem. It's only a problem for our godness, right? We'll always be in control and always enjoy. But we're not necessarily in control. And enjoyment depends upon how you define it, right? What one person calls enjoyment, another doesn't, right? Somebody calls enjoyment going to some, you know, 800 foot high dam and jumping off it with some green rubber band connected to your feet, right? And just hoping that it's strong enough that when you get to the bottom that you don't hit the rocks, right? Some will call that enjoyment. Others say it's insanity, right? right? So, I mean, you know, I said, everyone's got their opinion. So, that's the point, is enjoyment is a matter of definition. Right? If you think about moments that are enjoyable, they are, let's try this. A moment in which there was full focus and we considered it and we were secure. What do you think of that? Does that make sense? You could say is that you were happy, but sometimes it's not a happy moment. But it was enjoyable. It was sober, or it was very emotional, or it was very thought-provoking, right, or intellectual. Does that make sense? In other words, what creates dissatisfaction or unenjoyment when you don't know your security is questioned. Does that make sense? If the situation is secure, then it's always something that is appreciated. Right? As long as there's focus, right? If you're focused on it, you're in the moment, and you're secure, then you could call that enjoyment. Does that make sense? Right? Because if you're insecure, that's when you'll say it's not good. Because of the element of control in that. But here then, you have the control where you can do, but we can't do. So we see here Uddhava and Vidura put a slight twist on it, is that the Lord's in control. And depending upon the Lord, they're never insecure. They're always then, the relationship is strong. And because they're Krishna conscious, they're focused. Therefore, they're always enjoying. Does this make sense? Right? Does this make sense? In case a doubt might come up, well, no, but enjoyment is, let's say I'm eating something nice, and that's there. But I could give you that same nice thing and, you know, have 10 people there with sticks trying to chase you out of the room. You wouldn't call it as nice. Or you could say, oh, but it was nice, everyone was there, but then, you know, I found there was some sand in the sweet rice. But the problem isn't really the sand, because if you had eaten how much you want, and then there's sand in the other guy's sweet rice, you'd probably laugh. You know, I think it's funny. As long as the other person wouldn't be offended. Right? So the problem is not the sand. The problem is the actual definition of material happiness. Right? We gave a generic one of kind of like the nature of the soul, but the actual direct one of material enjoyment is the removal of pain. Right? It's hot. You go inside where it's cool. During the time that the pain is being removed, you call that enjoyment. As soon as you're cool, you don't enjoy the cool environment anymore. You don't. It just becomes normal. Or as long as you're hungry, while the pain of hunger is being removed, then the pleasure of eating is there. Right? And then from eating so much, then as long as, while the pain is there, as the digestion process happens, and it gets less, then it's there. But once it's digested, it's no longer, you don't feel. Does that make sense? You're very tired when you lay down this first, you know, moment, ah, this is nice. But once you're asleep, you're not going, hey, this is great. Right? Does that make sense? So, it's a removal of pain. Okay. So you're happy. The sound went away. Didn't explode. Okay. So, Yes, so then it's insecure. Why are you upset that you've got sand in your sweet rice? Because you can't satisfy your hunger. You don't know where you're going to satisfy it. Right? But as soon as you say, oh, okay, well, then I'll eat this, then the pain of that's gone. You're not no longer a problem. Does that make sense? So it's the insecurity that creates the problem. And that's why we want to be in control. It's simply an insecurity. Someone who's overly trying to be in control generally tends to be insecure. Tends to be. Unless they just have a powerful, commanding nature. But they're relaxed at it. It's not an issue for them. It's just what they do. Put them anywhere, they will become in control. It's just normal. Right? So, then we can see that being the definition, so it's not to do with the senses meeting the sense objects. It's actually how it's interpreted. Does that make sense? All we're doing here is a side point in case one would think, but why are they seemingly suffering though they're fully Krishna conscious? Because I joined this movement to get away from suffering. I had enough of it, and I want to get out of it. So it appears here is that the Lord's going away, there's suffering, there's this, there's that. Right? But these are natural reactions. Prabhupada says is that this separation and being in company of the Lord is a constant factor with the devotees. Right? It's a constant factor in which because it's connected to the Lord, there's no insecurity. And because they're fully conscious, it actually gives an enjoyable experience. Though it's a different flavor. Does that make sense? To be together, then being separate makes being together special. Right? Does that make sense? Krishna just sits in your heart and waits. Right? He just sits there. Right? That's masculine. Right? The feminine, something has to be happening. Something has to be going on. So therefore, it has to change just by nature. It goes back and forth. That's the way energy is, right? The wind is blowing. Means an energy is happening. The tree just sits there like that? No, it moves. Right? Everything moves. You notice your cloth from the fan is fluttering. Right? That's the way everything works. When it's energy, it moves back and forth. Right? How much moves one way, it moves the other. So it's just the nature of the interaction. Krishna can sit in one place forever doing the same thing. Right? But his devotees are the ones that are always making the change. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's our nature that these things happen. Right? So that there is separation and that there's union, that's because of us. You understand? Because Krishna interacts with us. Because the state of existence, then we don't function. Right? Atmarama's the position of Krishna. Just he exists and he's satisfied. But energy has to be doing something. This makes sense. So it's not a fault that there's something over there, something wrong. It's inherently how we function anyway. All it is now is it's being done in connection with Krishna, so it never has to change. It's always there. It's always functioning. Right? So we're always secure, and in Krishna consciousness, we're always focused on Him. So that means then, whatever is the situation and the emotion that one blends into another and enhances another, then that's fine. Right? It's not an issue. They're unhappy or they're separated from Krishna. No, because they're thinking of Krishna. Technically, they're not. It's just another form of being with Krishna. But because it changes the moods, which is what we need, or I'm not saying what we need, it's just the way we are, then that is connected to Krishna. So that's what makes it nice for Krishna. So the energies are conscious of actually what's going on, and that fluctuation in the variety of applications of service to Krishna that they perform, you know, in their body, mind, and words, then creates something nice for Krishna. Does that make sense? Does that get pulled together here? See, when we make very clear that when we're saying, you're stepping on some very fine lines, is that you're saying, one is starting with the premise that we become detached from the material world, attached to Krishna, that we've got. But then, in doing that, sometimes we have the tendency of we're detached from everything, including Krishna. Right? You can't get pleasure out of anything, even though the soul is made out of Ananda, right? So it's a little hard to leave that one out, right? One third of your what you're made of, you know, is we're trying to deny. But then, if not denying it, then the material comes up. Oh, then we can enjoy it. No, it's not here, it's there. Then we look, okay, enjoying there, but in this pastime where it's being brought out about that, then these two seem to be suffering. So I joined this movement to get away from suffering. Alright? So then we have to clear is actually what is pleasure and pain? What is suffering? So it's when you don't know who you are. And that means you don't know who you are because you're not connected to something that's solid. Right? Your identity only comes into crisis when you're not connected to that which creates it. Okay? You're a manager, and there's some doubt about your position. So that throws you out. Or in a relationship, a doubt, or anything. Right? Some knowledge that you had, and when you find out it may be wrong. Right? So then, it creates a doubt about your existence because you've connected yourself to that. I am a member of this family. I am in this position, or I have this body of knowledge, or I have whatever it may be. I am beautiful. I am, you know, powerful. Right? And then when there's a doubt between your connection to it, that's when the problem starts. Right? If there's no doubt, then there's no problem. Even if there is a distance, if you still think it's there, then it's fine. For you. Maybe not for everyone else, but for you it is. Yeah. So, then we see, the point is, it's the connection. So we're connected to Krishna. So when we're connected to Krishna, then everything works. Then we're actually happy. Then the various elements of the rasa of all the bhavas, the sthayi bhava, the sanchari bhavas, all these different things which are used as mediums of expression, then are fine. It doesn't matter which one it is. Right? Is that okay? So we just wanted to make it that the attachment is not the problem, it's where it is aimed. But we just wanted to clear that in the spiritual world, if you're attached there, then it's fine. It's good. Yeah. Any questions on this? Or comments? Or yes.
I want to make that
and Enjoy it.
You're saying with knowledge you can overcome, but sometimes you can do it, but sometimes the mind needs to go back again and want to be controlled and inspired again. But knowledge doesn't exist.
Knowledge seems to be insufficient. Yeah, I mean, the question was, is that in trying to situate yourself in Krishna consciousness, then we're very enthusiastic in the service, and then again we slow down, and when again this desire, the Purusha Bhava, the controlling enjoying comes up, or we study, we have knowledge, we apply it, it gives us good results, and then after some time it fades again, and again the old habits come up. So it's true that it's, so that's why it's practice. But the best is that those, the two examples are combined. If the knowledge and the service are combined, then it's the most powerful, then it has the least amount of, because otherwise the tendency is to go from karma to jnana to karma to jnana. Right? When you're, things are going nice, you just absorb yourself in the knowledge. And then when it's things start to go wrong, then you want to know why. And then when you know so much knowledge, then you get absorbed in that, and then the practical doesn't happen anymore. So the combination of that, that's buddhi yoga, that's considered the best. But it's understood it's going to take time and determination. It's just, that's the way it is. It's just practice. It's just practice. So it's not a problem. I mean, that's also a problem with the energy, is the impatience. Right? It's like that. As I say, Krishna can just sit there in your heart since time immemorial and do nothing. Just wait. You know, but since time immemorial, we've been doing a lot more than nothing. So we're always keeping ourselves busy. So it's just a matter of having that faith and commitment that one is therefore stable in application of knowledge and the service, right? To please Krishna, like that. And so with practice, it comes. So the more we hear, then the more we're able to practice. Because right? After learning, then a seva. Pranipata, parikrishna. That's all the learning process and contemplation. Then seva, then service. So it's a combination of both. We hear, we contemplate, we practice. If we combine those three, then it works very good. It's very powerful. We just need some patience. Nothing happens overnight, right? You know, the example is given of the girl. She wants a child, but she has to wait. Right? It doesn't happen overnight. Right? Unless, of course, you're Hidimbi or something. Then I think it does. You also grow up overnight also. So. No, before, right in front of your eyes. Right? From what I understood, it's kind of like the day. I think I've read that one place, by the evening or something, and they're 16 years old. You know, so they're born in the morning, by evening they're 16. You know? So, you know, you get to, you know, I guess, some of them immediately grew up. I think Vyasadeva just immediately grew. When he was born, he just immediately grew to full maturity, and then walked off. I guess it just depends on whether the mother wants to change any diapers or not. If not, then if the process is a little quicker, and if she doesn't mind doing it for an hour or two, then, you know, very well, you know. Spiritual happiness. Oh, so how is spiritual happiness? Spiritual happiness is based on seeing Krishna and the devotees happy. So as we define that over there, that's your standard way of doing, that's your motive for anything. You're doing this to please Krishna. Right? And you're cooperating with devotees to please Krishna. So then here, that's called sacrifice. The voluntary, restriction of your own needs or happiness for someone else. That's called sacrifice. So as we see here in the material world, at least in the pious society, sacrifice is main focus. Right? Even more than penance and austerity, sacrifice is the main. Right? Because that's the attitude that everybody functions under in the spiritual world. But here, our sacrifice can tend to be a bit fruitive. Right? We sacrifice and we want to get a material result. Or we sacrifice in jnana and we go to the Brahman. But it's still, we have some purpose to please ourselves. Well, there it's not to please yourself, it's to please Krishna. That makes a difference. Right? Because here it's a reflection, so you have to create it, right? There you have a spiritual body that, due to the mood, creates these things, right? Because of their affection for Krishna, therefore these moods naturally come up. Their bodily forms, everything comes automatically. Here they call them hormones. Right? And that creates all the different bhavas and everything here. So it's all mechanical, it's all chemical. To simulate what it looks like there. Therefore, externally it looks the same. But actually the whole motive behind it and how it's functioning is different. Is that okay? So end here, and then if there's any further questions, we'll continue after a few minutes. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Sarnaveta Bhaktivinanda ki, Jayantai Govinda ki.
You made big yaki and offering big feast.
You made
for him.
Oh, we will make.
See what you're doing and stuff. I think that was, there's a temple president who's
limited case you can say about things and stuff. But here it's like, you know, like 1.5 kilometers from one side of my project to the other. You're from which state?
I'm from Australia.
Australia?
It's going to be okay.
Okay. So that's the point. So the taste that you're getting, that's Krishna.
it's not this or that. You can say it's Krishna coming through the medium of, okay, water with some lemon and sugar. But that taste of this game by drinking it, that you know, that satisfies, that's Krishna. That meaningful moment is Krishna. But we take it as the lemon and the sugar and the water. Right? And we call ourselves happy because it's removing the pain and the thirst. But actually, if you connect Krishna with it, then the material happiness is there because you're removing the thirst. And because you see it in connection to Krishna, then the spiritual benefit is coming. So the devotees actually get both benefits. The karmis only sometimes get one. But actually only the devotees can get full material happiness. But that's not what they're looking for. That's the thing, is when you want it, you can't have it. And when you don't want it, you can have it. But let's say when you don't need it, it's available. But when you want it, it's not there. It's just the way it works. You can bend your head around that one, you can solve yourself a lot of trouble. The point is that when you want it, you can't get it. And when you don't need it, then you can have it. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? It's just the way things work. Does that make sense? How to see Krishna in our daily activities is not direct service. That point is there, that's the key. Krishna spends 3 chapters of the Gita explaining it. It's that whatever it is that makes the thing work, that's Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the guy is jumping off the bridge, right? With the bungee? Is that what it's bungee? Bungee? No, I was just saying bungee, right? Bungee. I guess the road maybe belongs to a bungee, it's a bungee. So then, whatever it is that is there, the excitement of it, or the fear, or, you know, the wind blowing in his face, or, you know, whatever it is that is there, that's Krishna. But they think it's all those other things. That's why it's called the mind. Maya is not what you're dealing with. Maya is what you think that you're getting your pleasure from. You understand? So you say, money is Maya. Money is just dead matter. But you think the pleasure that you're having, that you can go anywhere, do anything, just flash with the money, all the doors open, everybody's got a big smile on their face, everybody likes you.
They're like Benjamin.
Right? Benjamin, Ulysses S. Grant, George Washington, Hamilton, like that. And the other day I saw a $2 note. You ever seen a $2 note? Someone gave me a $2 note the other day. I can't remember who said that. That's what they like. You know, so it's not necessarily you. And you happen to be the medium for it, right? So that's the whole point. You're thinking they like me because you're the one giving the money. And they're thinking I like the money. Understand? So that's the illusion. Both are an illusion. But if you put it in the personal thing, is Krishna's entered into everything, right? So it's the person that's entered it. It's the person whose potency it is. It's actually the relationship. Right? Does that make sense? It's not what he's entered into. But we think that what he's entered into is attractive because of itself, not because we don't understand that Krishna's entered it. That's why it's attractive. Does that make sense? Krishna is there in a potency in the gold. That's why it's attractive. Right? It's Krishna's potency of beauty, of power, of fame, you know, of knowledge, renunciation. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, that everything in our life, we apply that. You know, why are you doing anything in your life? There is something taste you're getting from it. So that taste is actually Krishna. So you start to see like that, and after a while, the person that's giving is the taste of it becomes more important than the activity. Right? Then it's a matter of it's your duty, the activities continue. And if it's not your duty, then it stops. This thing is that this particular story is being completely misused.